Hello and welcome to another episode of It's Risky Business. We're back in here doing this thing. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm ready.
Oh, that's good.
Haven't been in here in a couple weeks, so yeah. It's exciting. And now we have another human with us.
We have a guest live with us right now
in the studio. In the moment.
Quite the gentleman. We have G. Cole, the founder of Pathwaves. G, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
That's good. That's good to hear. So for those of you listening, you've never heard of Pathwaves. It's a realization of over a decade spent mapping, studying, and balancing brainwave activity by G, with more than 16,000 sessions and over 1 million minutes of brainwave recordings to his credit. He is among the world's foremost brainwave experts. He is also the creator of Neural Empowerment, a pioneering science that balances the mind and body, empowering people to take control of each day and live consciously in the present. Super important.
Amazing.
To be mindful and to be in the present.
I'd say so.
So as the show goes, we are about pursuing passion, taking risks, going after the things that you want to do in life and feeling fulfilled because you're doing those things. And we want to hear about your journey. What risks have you taken? How the path has swerved, U-turned, weaved into neural empowerment and where you are now?
Well, I have quite a weaving, wandering, curvy, big holes path that I've been through. So back in college in the 80s, one of my professors told me that he expected everybody in the class to have on an average, you know, 3 to 5 different careers. And I knew my career already. So I was like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, went and worked for my dad out of college. And I worked for him for 5 years and then did a leverage buyout. And so when I bought him out in 91, I thought it was really cool. I was 28, you know, I was shaking and rolling. He had a partner, kind of nice business.
And what was the business?
It was a general insurance agency.
Okay.
So it was here in Miami. The agency that I bought out actually started in 1945 in Miami. So it'd been I was third generation. And then in 1992, Hurricane Andrew hit. And so for my business, that was devastating.
Yeah.
And I had just bought out all these people, right?
Wow.
And so I shifted into medical and workers' comp because, hurricane affects property and liability insurance and auto insurance, which is what we mainly did. And I became an expert in healthcare management.
Mm.
And from there, I built a company and risked everything. I actually raised a couple $1 million, mostly from friends and family. So I was just put everything on the line for a company that I believe was extremely progressive. The people around me were telling me I was 5 years ahead of my time. They still haven't done what I was doing. So I might have been 20 years ahead of my time.
Wow, yeah.
That company was a healthcare promotion company, a health promotion company. And we would go to businesses, bring in a nurse, a full-time nurse, who would do a health fair. So I would quantify everybody's health. And then we would do health promotion programs all year long and actually help the company's employees be healthier.
Wow, that's crucial.
Every year.
That's really important
and
work.
And I would help the employers become self-insured now that they're running their own program so they could profit from what they're working on.
Wow.
Because I knew that money was really what drives everything, even though I wanted to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I started taking the best accounts from all the big insurance companies. And so I got a phone call in the end of 2000. My company grew from 3 employees to 70 employees in 5 states with international operations.
Amazing.
Doing 15 million in sales by 2000. And so, I mean, a year in, I'm already nailing it. And I got a phone call from the board of directors of a reinsurance company. And they're like, what are you doing? And I started to tell them. They said, well, we're doing health prevention. I'm like, prevention? You mean you're stopping people from getting sick?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we help them get healthier? You guys are like 5 years behind me. And the guy, and he hung up on me. And within a month, I was audited by 9 different government entities.
Oh,
and
my.
The government basically shut me down in 1991. And so it was kind of traumatic. They froze my assets, sold off everything I owned. And I had a wife and 2 kids. And so I went home.
But what was the premise of that? Why? How were they able to shut you down?
Well, they found a law from 1855 and two lines in my contract that went against that law. They had never used it.
Oh, goodness.
And then they wrote a new law to make sure that they could put me out of business.
So, oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, I was shut down pretty harshly. I had 12,000 members of my health plans by that point. And so I was personally liable because in the insurance business, when you're the owner, you're liable all the way. There's no corporate shield.
Oh, wow.
So they got all my assets and everything. I had professional liability insurance, but I didn't have that much. I ended up with a judgment against me for about $9, $10 million back then.
Oh, my.
You know, I went home to my wife and said, hey, we're going to have to tough this out. And she said, well, I think I'm going to go find somebody and keep me in the lifestyle I've become accustomed to.
Oh, wow.
And left me. So I went through losing my business, my reputation, and my wife leaving me all at the same time. Wow. So I laid low for a little while, and I was in litigation management for a couple of years because I had 30 lawsuits against me from all my clients.
Oh, my.
I got through all that, and I ended up meeting another woman and getting married, and she was financially secure, so I didn't have to work anymore.
Okay.
And I went into day trading, which I wasn't very good at that, and we ended up trying to find ways to help people. And so we started buying duplexes for low-income families to be able to live in, and then started opening up houses for recovering alcoholics and drug addicts, and hired a psychologist. And so I started to work with a psychologist and started to study psychology myself to become a psychologist. And I kind of fell into a depression myself. So over time, I was working on that, did that for a while, studying psychology, and then I found, in 2007, I found neuroscience.
Wow.
I brought in a neurofeedback machine. I went and actually hunted out and found an inventor of a technology, and went and stayed with him. And I studied with him, and so really dove in. And so I stopped studying psychology and started just studying neuroscience in 2007, 2008. It wasn't a lot of money, so I wasn't taking a lot of risk at that point. However, we didn't make any money. So I was basically just running a charity, but it wasn't a charity. It was a for-profit business that just lost money.
Right.
So I did that company from 2008 until 2016, which is Brain Training Centers of Florida, which is the predecessor to the Pathways. Mm-hmm. And then I realized in 2015 that I had created something that doesn't really exist. I had a product that I could sell. And, I got some investors and we opened up Pathways and started to sell this new product. And it's the only reason why I do this and the only reason why I've been doing this is that I'm passionate about helping people.
Yeah.
And I believe 100% in what I'm doing. And, you know, I say I'm going to work, but I just love what I do because, I'm used to, at this point, miracles happening in my office every week.
It's beautiful.
Incredible. Right?
You know, and so I'm moving and shaking and moving and, doing stuff. I did a joint venture with a functional medicine doctor so we could do all the medical measurements at the same time we're doing mental. And I've really put together a program that doesn't exist. There's some huge differences between what I do and what really the industries in medicine, neurofeedback, and psychology do, in that at Pathways, we are geared towards helping people understand how they function and be in charge of their own nervous systems and avoid the overabundance of animal instinct, energy, and processing. So, sometimes we walk in a room, we look at how people look at us, our animal instincts kick up. And if somebody looks at us funny, we start to get aggressive or defensive or whatever. And that's entirely our animal instinct.
Yeah.
So at Pathways and through our psychology, we're helping people avoid that. Instead of what most psychology and medicine does now is help you cope with it.
Okay.
And these are all fear-driven issues, right? Fear is that number one offender. And I like to say, the opposite of fear is love. And so we talk about the story of the two wolves. I'm sure you guys are aware of that one. And that we want to feed the love wolf more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And another opposite of fear is safety. And the reality is almost all the time, especially here in the United States, we're all safe.
Yeah.
And I don't want my nervous system getting involved with that except for, for germs.
Right.
When I'm walking around, I'll use my intellect. I don't want my nervous system. I know my intellect's part of my nervous system, if you want to get technical, but what I'm talking about is my autonomic nervous system. Mm. You know,
I'm glad that you mentioned fear, because there's this book that I've been reading that I always go back to and refer to. It's called Your Mind is What Your Brain Does for a Living. And it gets into some of the programming that we've undergone over years of upbringing in infancy through childhood. And it goes into how the amygdala, which is part of the limbic system and the brain's fear center, basically describes that the amygdala can cause you to act before you think by activating fundamental motor functioning and emotional functioning while short-circuiting the higher functions of the cerebral cortex, including thinking. Because it's the fear center, like you mentioned, that was developed to warn us of incoming danger. Right. So if there's a lion running towards us, we have to run. But now in a modern day where we're not out in the bush in Africa, it still activates itself in situations where it causes us to fear taking a decision for yourself to pursue something that you're passionate about or something that is outside of your comfort zone and you're not used to doing.
Yeah, I really like that you brought up the amygdala, because there's something we talk about at Pathways called the amygdala hijack. And Daniel Goleman in the 60s came up with this. And it's, you know, like you're in the middle of a conversation, all of a sudden you're off on this tangent and you're like getting aggressive and you're getting angry and you don't even know what happened.
Yeah.
And that was the amygdala hijacking what you're doing. And the amygdala are these two little acorn things that are on each side of the thalamus, which is processing everything you sense. So you're talking to somebody and you subconsciously sense the tone in their voice, which kicks off a defensive, and then you react without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And the amygdala send that signal downward into your body before you're aware of it. The studies show between a second to a second and a half. So you can be a second behind that reaction.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is long enough for me to say some things I'm not sure I want to say.
That's that moment when you're speaking, you're like, no, put the words back in. Put the words in. You can't, because it's already out.
delete. Yeah. Redo. So, yeah, Stan, that's brilliant. That's a big part of what affects us. And again, that's our animal instincts that we don't need anymore.
Right.
You know, and so transcending that, I like to say we use the music of your mind to transcend your animal instincts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part of it. I mean, you know, we're just going after all the stuff you just read almost really for the first four or five sessions. I'm just going right after that. And we do a lot of work in the neurofeedback, getting the amygdala to not be so reactive.
Wow, that's so powerful. And we have so many options in front of us in terms of what we want to do in our lives, the relationships we want to keep, and we feel empowered to go after those. But the fear has historically held us back.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
The reality is, if I let my amygdala tell me what to do, Pathways wouldn't be open right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I've, you know, leveraged everything I have to keep Pathways open. And I can't tell you how many times in the last, you know, 12 years I've looked at myself and said, what are you doing? You wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, I'm not making any money. This is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Is helping people really worth it? You know, and every time I go back to love.
Yeah.
Well, I think it sounds like you're also, you're ahead of the curve, because I know that brain mapping is something I've heard of in the past, but not to the degree and level of detail in which you speak about it. And my own experience of it, which was incredible to have a mapping session. And then after the session to speak to a neurotech and have him describe areas of the mapping, I've started to feel some anxiety, but I was able to calm myself down because of the meditation work that I've done over the past year. Which I highly recommend meditation.
That's a pro tip moment.
Pro tip moment.
Learn how to meditate.
Yeah,
meditation. Get yourself through the risks.
Can help you in all areas of your life. And especially if you're a risk taker and you're out there pushing on your own small business, pursuing your passions, there's going to be moments where you're questioning yourself. As you just mentioned, is like, am I doing the right thing right now? There's no money coming in. But I feel like if you always have something to go back to that is motivating you and understanding your why, which I feel like you are very much aware of what your why is, that's why you're still doing it.
Yes. Oh, for sure. You know, our mission is to make the world a love-based place instead of a fear-based place.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what it's all about for me, you know, and it's just so incredible when you get to walk through that. And I'm glad you mentioned meditation, because that's how, when I wake up at 4 a.m., that's how I go back to sleep.
Right. Yeah.
And I have really good sleep because I work, I meditate.
Yeah.
And at Pathways, we teach people, because most people meditate to affect how they feel in the now. Mm-hmm. And we teach how to meditate to affect how you feel in the now and in the future and to affect how you function. Because mm-hmm. meditation is an inward conversation. Mm-hmm. And your body wants to do what you want it to.
Yeah.
And so when we learn how to start to direct our body like you do, to, hey, calm down. I got nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I'm so blessed. I mean, why am I having anxiety? Your body, sooner or later, will start to calm down.
Wow.
However, a lot of times that anxiety is going to block our ability to meditate. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it helps to get guided meditation. There's tons of apps. Or, I mean, Pathways, obviously, but I'm not just going to plug Pathways.
Yeah. Check out Pathways.
Yeah. But I'm an entrepreneur, you know, and I love what I do, and I've been a risk taker most of my life. And, you know, I've had the what you call failures, and some of those almost killed me.
Yeah.
And I got through. Meditation was a big part of that.
For anyone listening to this, considering a hobby, a passion, whatever it is that they're into, and they've been wanting to pursue it, I can tell you right now, you're going
to
fail. I could tell
to
you.
To some degree. I could to tell, some degree.
Thank you, Amanda. Amanda, we want everybody to know that on the show, Amanda is the heart and I am the cardiac arrest. but yes, to some degree. But that's, I think, if you name the fear, then I feel like you're taking its power away to a certain degree. So a lot of us are afraid to take these steps, take action towards the things that we want to do because we're afraid of failure, but it's going to happen in one way or another. So why not just go and do it, you know, and fail?
and I do think when you fail, it like almost creates calluses. Like when you're a risk taker, you kind of like, you get that first big failure, even if it's a small menial failure, it still hits in a really, really profound way. But you see that you get through it and then you keep powering through and you keep powering through and that callus builds and you're like, I've got more power over this fear and the potential of failure than it has over me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, so I guess you're the heart, you're the cardiac arrest, is that what you say? I'm the long-term enjoyment of life and I don't use the word fail or failure anymore.
Great.
Those are now lessons for me.
And that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, lessons.
Everything that I used to call a failure in my life has taught me some really valuable insight, which I now share with others. And it's just part of my, you know, it's kind of like why I'm here. I know I'm here because I went through what I went through and I can help so many people. You know, I've had the bad divorce. I've been illegally put in jail and had to spend time in jail when I did nothing wrong. I've lost businesses. I've been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I persevere through community, you know, always having people that I could talk to and tell the truth and not be fearful of what they think of me, you know, and it's really the things you guys are talking about are so powerful. So I appreciate you bringing me in.
No, and we appreciate your presence here, really.
We truly do.
So going into a little bit of functions of the brain and neuroplasticity, which I believe to be the ability for you to change the way that your brain functions, the synapses, the way that it makes connections.
That's correct. Yeah, it's really the science of how we adapt.
So there's another section here that I found interesting on this book. It says, simply put, mindfulness and the resolve to continue being mindful help us overcome our machinery's resistance to change our lives. Every mindful act reinforces our new behavior as the brain's malleability allows us to create new neural pathways for a healthier living. The more often we act mindfully, the more often our new neural pathways will be the pathways along which our neurons fire. Essentially, the patterns and the programming that you've had over years, you can change tapping into that animal instinct and changing that fear-based action that sometimes we take or don't take really in situations.
Well, that's a huge, huge point. I said earlier about feeding the love wolf. When you're feeding the love wolf, you're actually creating nerves that are generating the energy that's the same as love. And so what you're talking about in that reading is that whatever you do, you're actually creating nerves. So whatever you focus on grows. Grows where? Oh, it's growing inside of you. Mm-hmm. So whatever you think about all the time is you're actually changing your body to create those thoughts without you calling them up. It becomes part of your automatic processing as part of neuroplasticity. Mm. So what we think is so important. And so if we get those ruminations about, oh, I'm a failure and I'm this and I can't believe that I even think I can do this. Who do I think I am? All that stuff, I'm actually creating. My body's changing to create that. That's part of that neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
I had no idea until I got into the depth of this neuroscience.
That's why.
I really think they should teach us this in first grade.
1,000%.
I mean, why do I have to go learn this when I'm like 50?
And going through the thick of it, right.
You know, well, yeah. It's just great why you guys are doing this podcast. Yeah. You can start teaching people.
Yeah, we really believe in mindfulness. And by beginning positive thoughts, we can also create new nerves that reshape our future actions.
Oh,
and that's exactly what you guys are doing at Pathwaves, where you kind of kickstart that process for people to really like get in there through an intensive program.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And there's also something called neural pruning. So it's a natural part of neuroplasticity. So if you used to say, you learn a new language and you used to call milk leche and now you got to call it milk. If you say milk enough for it, sooner or later that leche will be cut off. And so those nerves that contain that mannerism or action are no longer, you flush them. And that most of that happens in sleep. So vital to all of these processes is sleep. So if you want your neuroplasticity to really work well, you want to work on sleeping, preferably unmedicated or not taking the bong hit beforehand.
Yes.
Maybe that's another pro tip. Don't take a bong hit before bed. So what's happening when in the mapping session when somebody comes in? If I were to go in to Pathwaves and get a session.
Well, you get to come in and sit in a very comfortable chair in a very nice setting, and some really loving, nice people will give you some little exercises. They're going to attach sensors to your scalp with EEG paste, and that's used around the world. We follow EEG medical procedures to the T, and we're COVID safe too. So you sit there, and the sensors are recording the nervous system's activity that you're creating in your brain. And we put it through the computer, keep track of it, and create a proportional analysis. So another really big thing about Pathwaves that's different than EEGs and medicine and science is, and you may have heard it often in meditations where they'll say, well, we're going to get into a theta state or we're going to get into an alpha state. And so EEGs, if you go to the hospital, only show the most predominant electrical pattern that you're creating, which could be alpha or theta. Those are names of brainwave bands or electrical frequencies. And the fact is, we're always creating everything. And so we do a proportional analysis. And so, neurofeedback people will tell you, oh, you want alpha to be the strongest pattern in the back of the brain. Look at the EEG and say, look, they're alpha. Because it's the strongest pattern. But there's a lot of other things happening.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, alpha means I'm happy with myself. I'm happy with the world. Everything's working great. I can be joyous. I can run around and go, yes. And right below that is theta, which is going to argue with it. So if I say, I'm getting up and I'm going to work and I'm getting ready, it's going to be a great day. And then that little voice comes up and says, yeah, what are you thinking, man? You're going to blow it. That's coming out of theta. And yet they're both there. And so the medical people and the people that do neurofeedback would say, oh, well, you look great. And I'm like, well, I have this voice. It's just not as strong as my alpha. It's still interrupting. It's one of the problems with affirmations.
Yeah.
A lot of people will say, let's do affirmations and you're going to be great. And so affirmations usually boost alpha, boost beta, and sometimes will affect delta. But theta may be arguing with it and you don't know. So you can actually be creating conflict by saying things like, I am brilliant.
Right.
I am the top executive. If your theta doesn't believe it, you're creating turmoil inside of you.
Wow.
I've always felt that affirmations are great, but they don't provide answers. And I've been practicing asking questions. Questions like, what is success to me? Not, I am successful.
Mm.
the mind is always looking for answers, I feel like, because we love receiving and processing data, because that's essentially what the brain is doing all the time. So I've got into a practice of, instead of affirmations, I ask questions that are based on the things that I want to pursue in life or my goals.
No, I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. What we do is we acknowledge that we have a lot of different systems in our body, and it's kind of a team effort, that this body we live in. So I like to talk to myself in the we state, and I say, hey, today we want to get aligned and in tune with what our purpose is. I'm going to show up and be loving.
Yeah.
And I actually spend time in the morning redirecting all of my energies together. So I don't say we are love. I say we are going to create. I want to create love today, and that's my intention. And I create something I call the love cocoon. So I'm trying to build as much love energy as I can from all my cells, so it emanates off my body.
Love it.
And I'm walking around in the love cocoon.
It's working. We feel it. We feel it from 6 feet away. Yeah. COVID times. We feel it.
I want to hug you right now. Yeah. But we're being safe.
Yes, COVID safe.
But that's, I love it.
I love the question thing. So do you also control your answers?
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I can just see myself saying, all right, am I going to show up and kick ass today? And my answer being, no, you suck.
No. I usually just ask questions about where I want to be and where I'm going with certain projects and things that I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
Something that I've experienced with this is that I always wonder how something happened. And then you'll see like a Netflix documentary, or like you'll hear something in your friend's social media post that answers that, essentially.
Oh, beautiful.
And I've heard this from someone else also, this whole concept of asking questions, that if you just ask questions about how was I able to form a successful podcast, and through the experience of doing and asking that question, then the answer will appear at some point down the line. So that's something that I've been doing very recently, and I'm just trying different things, you know. And it's like, Once you really get into meditation, for me, it feels like a playground.
It is.
Wow.
You know, you really get into it, and it's like I really started to look forward to it. And then once I got into the space, I was like, wow, this is a playground, because you're going inward. And I mean, the human body is gorgeous. Our functions, our mind, how it all works together. So you are in your own playground when you really go into meditation. And it's been amazing. And it's something that I've been trying to develop over years. And then finally, I feel like in the last year, I've been able to really do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started trying to meditate in 2000. And it really became a daily part of my life in like 2005. And I spent years just trying to figure it out. Got some books and talked to some people, and it just didn't make sense to me. I couldn't quiet the inner voices.
Yeah.
You know, there was just too much going on. And it took me a long time of, like you said, trying it and working at it and knowing it's a process. And then one day it just started to kick in. And mostly for my sleep. That's where I really started doing it.
Yeah.
And then I started doing it every morning, because I used to wake up every morning depressed. No matter how I went to bed, I go to bed happy, joyous, free, whatever, I'd wake up depressed for years. I mean, I went through that for years. And so I figured out I got a sleep problem, you know. So yeah. I thought about not sleeping. It didn't work.
Not very sustainable approach.
Like you said, I try things, you know, I try them out. But yeah, it took a while. You're right on.
Yeah.
But I love it. I call it the holodeck, you know, from Star Trek.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's also been an extremely valuable self-directional device for me to be able to, you know, keep working forward and keep moving forward. And so, yeah, and that question thing, I guess I do ask the universe for questions.
Yeah.
You know, how am I going to do this? You got to show me the way.
Yeah.
I know I'm doing what I'm doing because I'm supposed to be.
Right.
You know, all those times, which has got to be in the last, you know, 12 years, at least once a year, where I've just sat back and I got to stop this. I just can't keep doing this. And yeah, you know, it's always the answer has been, you have no choice.
Oh, right.
You keep doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, because you feel like there's nothing else that you can or should be doing.
Well, there's a lot that I could be doing. It's just, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. All my life experience has brought me to this.
Yeah.
And how much I help people on a daily basis is over the top. So
that's what I was going to say, is the impact that you have on individual humans and humanity as a whole is much greater than an additional dollar you would make in any other role.
Yeah, that's mine.
What I also find really amazing about your story and your path is that it feels like everything that you've done has been led by your love of humanity and health, which health I think is encompassed in that. And I think it's just amazing. Yes, you've had multiple careers, but the core has remained the same. And it's really amazing that you've had that kind of, you've been tuned into that part of you since an early age, whether it was medical insurance, ultimately you wanted to help people. And it's no coincidence that it's led you to where you are.
Well, I realize that I think differently than people. You know, I'm different. You know, I guess it's not such a good thing or bad thing. I mean, all the way back to 1992, I realized that the systems that are in place aren't working. Mm-hmm. And back then, healthcare, I mean, was still abominable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just, the system is horrendous. And one of the other reasons why I ran into so much trouble back then is that I created a checks and balances for the medical system. So you wouldn't, I mean, we tracked how many positive and negative outcomes each doctor had in our network, each hospital, each clinic, so that we could understand how good they were at their job. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe that medicine should just be practiced. And if you're just practicing medicine, why are you charging me? I mean, you should know what you're doing before you charge me, you know?
Yes.
And so it's, I've just thought differently for a long time. And I'm still wanting to help humanity have systems that work. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our society is built on the same animal instincts that are messing us all up, right? Right. We're fear-based pack animals. And so our society is always trying to push us into our packs. And then pushing fear on us, since we're fear-based pack animals, is how you get people to buy your product.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's understandable. I just think there's a better way. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Working on it slowly.
And there's definitely been a major boost in the direction of some sort of change with the pandemic. A lot of people have gotten a major wake-up call by the whole pandemic situation and had to really look at themselves, their identity in the world, and where their value lies within them. Because a lot of us who hold on to our jobs for meaning, and all of a sudden our jobs are gone, you're deemed non-essential. What does that do to a person's identity?
Yes.
And I think that's an understanding yourself on a deeper level is the tool that can get you through anything, and understanding who you are in the world, not based on what your job is, but what you're doing for people around you and what you do for yourself in working from love.
This was like a total reset, global reset. And those that are willing to kind of do the work and dig in, we're going to end up on a really wonderful side of this. And those that aren't, you know, we'll see where that goes.
There's definitely always something to be learned, you know? So, I mean, every day, it's funny because I am in charge and at my company, and some people are like, why are you talking to these people, you know, that are coming in to talk to me? I mean, because I get, you know, a lot of kind of random people want to say their ideas for me to consider. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because I never know.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's always something to learn. You know, I learned to ask questions today.
Yeah. Ask questions.
And I learned Amanda's the heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's always something to learn. So,
as we come to the close of the show, G, is there any way, tell us every way that our listeners can connect with you, either the website or just walking in and getting the mapping done. How can they connect?
So we are at pathwayslife.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google, Yelp. I mean, we're all over the place. And please check testimonials and reviews. You know, we're 5 stars everywhere you can be. And, mm-hmm. You know, we help people live incredibly happy lives. So there's a lot of really heart-touching and strong testimonials. Mm-hmm. So Pathways Life, and on Pathways Life's webpage, there's a little button in the upper right-hand corner that says you can book a free consultation. So that, to me, I would recommend that. Mm-hmm. And you can just go in there and in the calendar, it's an automated calendar, book your time, and one of my friendly, loving professional staff we'll call you and tell you as whatever you want to know about what we're doing. We are an open book. I love people who ask questions because we are very, very, very deep into the science. My mentor was really strong in not being hooked up to, you know, things that don't have a scientific backing.
Mm-hmm.
You can also come to our offices, and we're in Miami University of Miami Medical Campus, right by Jackson, mm-hmm. in the University of Miami Life Sciences building.
Very, very cool building.
Yeah, great facility. Yes. Amanda and I were there, and my own testimony, it was an amazing experience from start to finish.
Yeah.
As you said, very comfortable seating, just a very, very relaxing environment. And the whole experience was extremely rewarding. Finding out more, talking to the tech, and then getting the session after where they read the electrical patterns and all the information was just so eye-opening for me. And it was also nice to know that I'm doing pretty good because that's what they said.
Yeah.
Meditation serving.
Yeah.
You.
So.
And it's cheap. It's not very expensive. I mean, you would think with what we're doing, since it's so progressive, it would be really expensive.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very the great value.
Well, G, thank you so much for taking the time, chatting it with us.
Yes.
Two crazy kids over here with this podcast.
Taking risks.
And well, I encourage you, anyone listening, everyone listening, to take some risks. I'm not talking about going skydiving. If you want to pursue your passions, if you have a hobby, something that you've always thought about doing, make the time to do it. Set aside an hour, 2 hours a weekend. If you like drawing, making music, want to learn the guitar, even if you're not trying to make a career out of this, just do it for what it will do to your own mental health, to your happiness, and how it'll affect the people around you, because it will inspire someone else to do the same. And it'll have a domino effect on the goodwill that we can spread on our beautiful little grain of sand out in the universe.
Amen. That was a beautiful ending. Thank you so much, G.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's Risky Business.
Oh, yes.
I want to add to it. It's Risky Business and it's worth it.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
I think we just got our tagline there.
We got the tagline and the name of this particular episode.
I love it.
You named it.
Awesome. Thank you, G.